owned by oil companies. So that as well is the challenge that we're facing as we try to evaluate these applications. Section 2A, it has prohibition of certain activities. It basically says that a person cannot manufacture or sell or develop a site or retail without a prescribed, without a relevant license issued by the Controller of Petroleum Products. And at the moment, there are people who are still retailing in particular without licenses. And some of them, I think, they're coming out now because some of the oil companies are beginning to be very strict that if you have not applied for a license, we can supply you with products. And people then tend to approach us now and they want to apply for a license. The challenges, as I said, that we're facing now are people who approach us to find that they've already started developing a site. And now they come to us and said, we need a license, which means we have to try and make sure that they get a license, whereas according to the Act is that you're not supposed to develop a site without a license. And that becomes a problem because they tend to be very pushy and think that we're blocking them from operating, whereas they didn't take into consideration the requirements of the Act. It's also a challenge, the fact that of lately, there are a lot of people who conclude sale agreements to take over service stations. And once that is done, then they approach the department to get a license. It is our concern that it's not a guarantee that a person can get a license because we have to evaluate that particular license, consider the economic feasibility of that particular service station. And if the controller believes that that service station it's not going to be economically viable, there are possibilities that they may not get a license to operate. And that is a concern because most of the time they approach the department once they've concluded the sale agreement. I think you might have seen these objectives of licensing in the past, but I think the point that we wanted to raise here, as we move to the next slide, is that as we evaluate licenses, we are using those objectives of the Act to make recommendations to the controller to issue the license. And the problem that we have with applicants is that they are not aware of these conditions. And it becomes difficult once you start evaluating their license and you tell them that some of those objectives that are listed in the Act are not meant. Hence, it doesn't warrant to issue that particular license. And now it becomes a big issue. The other one of the objectives there is to promote an efficient industry. The challenge with this is that the controller has to make a discretion whether that particular license application for a particular business entity is going to promote efficient industry in South Africa. And that is a challenge because if we don't have a standard way of looking into that, somebody can ask a question if we rejected the license in an area where there's high concentration of service stations and we granted another license, maybe in a rural area where maybe there's no service station. But all that is based on the discretion that the controller has in terms of making sure that he issue licenses that are going to promote an efficiency in the industry. One of the key things that we're looking for as we evaluate particularly new licenses is the net present value calculation. when the regulations were being drafted, we considered various options that we're going to use to ensure that we calculate the economic viability of a business. And the net present value methodology was one which we decided to follow. And the reason being that it gives a realistic value of the business. And as you will know, in the next slide, I put that what NPV stands for basically is the future cash flow in that particular business, which gets discounted to the present value. So you take into consideration, for example, the money that one puts in as key money to buy a service station, and then you look at what are the values or the future cash flow that are going to be generated from that business. And from there, then you discount it using a discount rate, and you bring it back to the present value. We have developed a model to do that for us, which we also use as a benchmark. And if the future cash flow is negative, then that tells the controller that in terms of economic, the viability of that business, it's not going to work. The challenge that we have there, particularly the last bullet point, is that most of the NPV calculations that we receive, they take into consideration the convenience store. And it's a challenge for us because we don't really regulate what happens in the convenience shop. We only interested much on what happened on the forecourt and the cost that we want to use in the evaluations are costs that are related to running that forecourt, not necessarily the shop. I think in the future, I've put it somewhere in the slide as well, that the task 141, which has to do with accounts in the petroleum industry, is going to help because we're going to divide expenses that are related to petroleum and expenses that are related to shops and restaurants that we find on service station. And that we believe that is going to assist us to overcome that challenge. Section 2A4, it defines the kind of people who are supposed to apply for a license. It's basically the owner of a property in terms of manufacturing and site licenses. For site licenses, it also allows for a written permission if a land is publicly owned. Most of the land in rural areas, they are owned by chiefs and the municipalities in those areas. So we do allow if a person would get a written permission to utilize that particular land, and we can take that into consideration in issuing licenses. For retail and wholesale, the person who has to apply, it must be the owner of that business entity. Challenges again in this regard is on evaluating and licensing some of the manufacturing facilities where they are joint owned by companies, for example, BP and Shell in Sapref and Sasol and Total in Natref. That has become a big challenge to us because some of these oil companies, they didn't want the entity or that manufacturing facility to apply for a license. And their argument is that as owners, so for example BP and Shell, each would like to apply for a manufacturing license for that particular manufacturing facility, which become a challenge to us because it's supposed to have only one license and not two licenses. But we are working on that in terms of trying to come up with a solution how to deal with those issues there. The process that we have in applying for licenses, it's basically demonstrated by that the flow there on the screen. What I would like to highlight there is the days that it takes to make a decision by the controller. It takes 90 days to make a decision if one submits the application. However, if the Act says that in the first 6 months of the commencement of the Petroleum Products Amendment Act, those licenses or applications that will be made within that 6 months, it's going to take 250 days to evaluate them. And I think the reason for that is because people who were operating before the 17th of March 2006, which was the commencement of the Amendment Act, are deemed to have a license on only one condition, that they comply with all national, provincial, and local government legislation. So they are deemed to have a license. Hence, the 250 is for mostly those ones that have to be converted into the new licenses that we are issuing. But under normal circumstances, it should be 90 days to issue that license. The challenges that we have there is people wait for the last minute to submit applications. Last year, September, on the 17th, it was the last day to submit for conversion licenses, because the Act in Section 2D states that if you were operating before the 17th of March 2006, you had 6 months to apply and you would be deemed a license holder. Then people waited for the last minute, and that created a lot of problems, because one, they didn't even follow the instruction on the application form. For example, it says that if you apply for a site license, there must be a corresponding retail license. You cannot apply only for one license. And what people then did as a result of waiting for the last minute is that they would just submit one application to us. And it's a problem, because you cannot accept one application because it has to be linked with the other one. That's a challenge. It's also a challenge in terms of annual information, which has to be submitted by end of February each year. Our experience this year as well, that most of the people waited until the last days, and now there's this big rush which people make to us, and it becomes difficult, because we then cannot cope with processing those applications. In terms of conditions of licenses, it also is listed on the Act. However, the reason I brought it is just to discuss some of the challenges that are related to that, particularly with regard to enforcement. I think let's move to the next one. With regard to enforcing those conditions of licenses, as I indicated, there are people as well who then came to us after the closing date to submit application. And the challenge is that some of these service station or businesses were done, some of them 20 years back, and there were by that time no environmental impact studies that were conducted when those service stations were built, as it is now a requirement. And one of the requirements for new licenses is that you must have that environmental impact analysis conducted for that particular business. It becomes a challenge because, one, according to the Act, now they have to apply as a new license, but then they cannot provide the requirements for a new license, which is a big challenge for us in terms of how do we go about that. Transitional licenses, as I said, this refers to Section 2D of the Act, where any person who qualify according to Section 2D must apply within 6 months. And it's unfortunate that we still have other people who didn't apply. Some of them are still trying to apply now. And the reason why they are trying to apply is because some of the oil companies or wholesalers are saying that we cannot supply you with petroleum products if you don't have a license, because it's also a condition of those manufacturing and wholesaling licenses that you supply a person who has a license unless you are supplying to an individual for own use. For example, a company can supply to Anglo-American, you know, petroleum products for Anglo-American to use, not to sell, trade on it. So that's the challenge, because now those people are forced to come to us to apply for a license, and we don't have any provision in the Act where we should treat them as conversion licenses. Actually, they've even disabled the function in our system to capture that particular license as conversion. You can't now, after the 17th of September, when you go into it, it has to be new. And that becomes a challenge in terms of how then do you evaluate that particular license. I've touched on the first bullet point, which is late applications. But the second one, which we are facing now as we are busy with the evaluation of licenses, it's wrong documents that people attach on the application. There are a set of documents which, if you are applying for a conversion license, you're supposed to attach, and a set of documents which, if you're applying for a new license, you're supposed to attach. Our experience is that people attach wrong documents, for example, where we require registration documents issued by the Registrar of Companies and Cloth Corporation. People would just submit a form that they completed when they were applying for that. And the challenge is that that form doesn't show us who are the directors in that particular company or who are the members in that particular CC. And that becomes a challenge, because in evaluating a license, one of the objective of the Act is to give effect to the charter. And we have to know who are the directors, who are the members in that particular company, so that we can be able to calculate the HDSA percentage in issuing that license. That becomes a big challenge. The other one as well is Section 2D4A. Section 2D4A, it basically says that a person needs to comply with all national, provincial, and local government legislation for them to be guaranteed a license. And we have cases now where people, as we evaluate them, we request, for example, copies of invoices, you know, from January, February, and March 2006, that we require so that we can see if a person was operating or not. And it's unfortunate that most people applied for conversion licenses, whereas they didn't qualify for that. And now when we require those invoices, they cannot give us those invoices, which become an issue. The other one is tax clearance certificate. Most people don't give us the tax clearance certificate when we request for that, and that becomes a challenge, because we deem that as not being in compliance with national, provincial, and local government laws if somebody was not paying tax. And we are in discussion with SARS in terms of how do we deal with that, and as well with the state law advisor in terms of can we use lack of tax compliance as one of the reasons to decline a license based on Section 2D4A. If the application is for conversion license, which is supposed to be deemed a holder of a license, and hopefully in the next coming weeks we should be in a position to say what do we do with those people who are not complying in that regard. I want to repeat what Section 2D says, but there is Section 2D4A, as I indicated. That's the only condition that a person needs to comply with to be deemed a license holder. And they do that one as well by giving us a declaration and indicating that they are in compliance with the law. We also indicate to the controller before issuing a license that if it will be found that they are not in compliance with the law, therefore, that license will either be revoked or it won't be issued if it has not been issued yet. In terms of the number of licenses that have been accepted and we are busy with the evaluation at the moment. They are around 12,173. And that excludes licenses that came to us and they didn't have some of the required documents. But then what we did, we kept them and we contacted the applicants to say that they should forward those required documents because we won't be able to capture them without that, those documents. So it shows that number can easily get to 12,500 if all the applications were captured. You can see there in terms of the number of conversion sites and retail and the number of new sites and retail, and in terms of wholesale, I think for wholesale it's very interesting that conversion is 415 licenses. That includes all the resellers that were existing before the commencement of the Amendment Act, and we have 128 new wholesalers who applied for licenses. In terms of the monthly targets for issuing licenses, that's how they are. We target to this month, for example, do 425 licenses, the site license and retail license. And the reason those two figures have to be the same is because you can't issue one without the other. So, and it's also a very big issue because if a retail license gets rejected, even if the site license was correct and it's supposed to be issued, automatically as well gets rejected because you can't issue one without the other. And vice versa as well applies. In terms of the challenges that we're facing, it's the compromise of broad-based economic empowerment and small-medium enterprise. Here we have cases where oil companies, for example, would take some of their big sites, some of those that are on national routes and all that, and they will get an ATSA individual to register a company with CIPRO, and they applied for a license. And in evaluating that particular license, we then request for memorandum of understanding and articles of association. And you discover that the information that is provided when they applied, which is contained on the registration documents from CIPRO, they differ with what is in the memorandum of understanding, where people sign agreements, for example, with oil companies, where an oil company is having a share in that particular business. That is very unacceptable because Section 285 as well stipulates that a licensed wholesaler cannot use any method, scheme, or understanding or arrangement that will result in them holding a retail license. But that's one of the issues that we have found during the evaluation process now of these applications, where oil companies use some other agreements which we don't have to tie in some of the BE applicants. And the other one is lack of legal and law enforcement support in concluding prosecution of transgression successfully. We have a case, for example, where an applicant from KZN applied for a conversion license, and when we requested invoices for Jan, Feb, and March 2006, that particular applicant couldn't provide that, which basically indicates that they were not operating before the commencement of the Amendment Act. And therefore, then they went to court, and I was told last week that without being informed, the state attorney decided that we don't have a case, and that was an issue to us because they didn't even consult with us to get the motivation. So that's an issue in terms of ensuring that we enforce non-compliance to the legislation. The other one I touched on, applicants applying after the due date. And the other issue, which is the only one to us, is temporary license applicants. It seems that because now we request some of this information, including tax clearance certificates, what people then do as a result of non-compliance with that, they start selling those businesses. And most of the licenses, as you have seen, have not been issued to date. And that becomes a challenge because what they do, then they approach us and want to apply for temporary licenses. And if we explain to them that what temporary licenses are supposed to do, it's not to allow people to circumvent the system or the process of applying a normal license. It's for cases where there's an emergency and you need a temporary license. So that becomes an issue because then they accuse us that we don't want people to, why are we preventing people if they want to sell their businesses? But we came up with a system to say that if that happens, we are going to request a declaration from the convention license applicant stating that they are going to provide all the information that the controller will need to process that particular application. And if then they don't, therefore automatically once the temporary license expires, that person will never get the normal license for that particular site because there will never have been a license in the first place. So that's an issue that we are dealing with, where I think people now are starting to sell their businesses to try and avoid that issue of evaluating whether they are in compliance with the Act and all that. Well, I think we can move. The other issue as well is applicants, particularly for size and retail, not providing correct information. For example, people give wrong telephone numbers, wrong postal address, and we will write to them maybe to request information, and we try to call them and we can't get hold of them. And that has been, I think it came about because of bullet point number 3, where they use agencies and oil companies to apply on their behalf. And I think people had probably in mind that, well, when they saw the requirements that are supposed to accompany the application form, they took it for granted that it means there won't be any other information that would be required for me to get the license. And they said, well, because I was operating, therefore it's going to be an automatic thing that I'm going to get the license. However, Section 26 in the regulation of site and retail licenses gives the controller that the right to request for additional information that is going to assist in making a decision. So that's a serious problem that we have, because when we contact some of the applicants, some of them are not, they know nothing about these applications, and they will always refer us back to agencies. And according to us, we're not supposed to deal with agencies because we don't really know who they are. You know, although we don't say that you have to come personally to bring the application to us, but it becomes a problem if the owner doesn't even know the kind of information that we request. And this is causing lots of delays in processing license applications. Some of those applications that we have evaluated and recommended to the controller to be issued, the Act says that if your license is successful, we'll give you a letter which will indicate the account number and the reference number that you need to use to deposit the license fee, which is 500 rand for retail and 1,000 rand for site licenses. We are experiencing big problems with oil companies because they are not paying for those licenses. And as a result, licenses now, we have couple of licenses that in our offices, because they are not paying that license fee, and that, so they are not, they cannot collect those licenses. And it's also a challenge because in terms of reconciling those monies that are paid into different accounts, because we use different accounts based on the province where a license is applied from, and the reference numbers as well they give, this becomes a challenge because what the, some of the oil companies said to us is that they don't want to make a payment every time a license gets issued. They want to make a once-off payment. And it's going to be a big issue with the internal auditors where we cannot be able to link the license and the money if people are going to make a one lump sum. So we are in discussion with the oil companies where they have to pay for a license once that license is issued. They must not wait for other licenses. The other thing as well is that the regulations allow the controller to specify the time period where if a license is issued, that money has to be paid by. So that's one thing that we are going to do. Actually, we have done that already. I think day before yesterday where we updated the letters that we send once the license is successful, we put a date there that this particular license needs to be, the money for this particular license needs to be paid on this particular date and the license be collected. The issue therefore is what happens then to those people who still ignore that and not pay? Maybe just to go back, one of those challenges, which is the last bullet point regarding resellers and small farmers, it's the one that I indicated earlier on where they, some of them, they came to the department, we had meetings with them, where they indicated that they feel that this law is going to put them out of business, because if somebody is a wholesaler, is not allowed to sell in quantities less than 1,500, and farmers as well arguing that it's going to increase their input costs if they can no longer order in quantities less than 1,500. Because what it basically means is that if you have to buy a quantity less than 1,500, you have to go and buy from a retailer, not a wholesaler. So that's an issue with which we dealt with. However, we explained the rationale behind this legislation in terms of the economic impact that has to everybody who uses petroleum products. In terms of the way forward, I've indicated that we're going to give applicants due date to provide information. One of the challenges to date why we have not managed to issue as many licenses as would like or would have been able to is because we wrote letters to some applicants in August already, those who applied earlier on. But some of them to date, we have not received the information that we want. We call them, you know, we resend letters and all that, but they are not giving us that information. So I think there will need to come a time where we say that maybe, this is just an example, that on the 31st of May 2007, everybody must have a license and they can only be able to buy and sell petroleum products if they have a license number, where at the moment people are allowed to use reference numbers, application reference numbers that they get when they submit their application to be able to trade. So I think that's what we're going to do. It's also going to become a problem because people then might wait until that date and we have this rush where people now are providing that information and they expect us just to issue licenses like that. So it's a serious issue which we are faced with at the moment. As well, I included that second bullet point, which I just spoke about now, in terms of the timeline to pay for license, to pay the license fee, as well as the fourth bullet point, task 141, regulatory accounts and review of price methodology. We believe that that is going to assist us when it comes to evaluating, or when it comes to distinguishing between what happens, the expenses that are related to the forecourt, and those expenses that are related to other things on the forecourt, things like restaurant, car washes, convenience store, and all that. Because at the moment, the way the pricing methodology is, we regulate petrol price at the retail level, and what then happens is that people tend to put all the expenses which are non related to petroleum products into the submissions that are made every year to determine the margin. And what then that it does, then it has a negative impact in terms of the price of petrol, which therefore consumers have to bear when now the price has to go up. So Task 141 is going to allow us to distinguish all those expenses. So expenses that are related to the shop will never be accounted for on the shop.